It is Wednesday, July 26, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, President Donald Trump bans transgender people from serving in the U.S. military. We look at efforts to bring a ceasefire to Libya. And singer Demi Lovato overcomes personal problems to release a new single. It's all ahead. President Donald Trump says the U.S. military will no longer let transgender people serve in any capacity. This reverses a policy former President Barack Obama's administration announced a year ago. Trump announced the decision on Twitter, saying he made the decision after consulting with generals and military experts. I spoke with VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb and asked her if the decision was expected by the U.S. military.
I don't think it was. From what we're getting here in the building, there was not a prepared statement in place. It was very rushed. We were referred to the White House, which is something that if it's a military policy, usually the Pentagon is ready with a statement. But instead, it has just been, we are working with the White House. And I was speaking to another spokesperson about how this would affect the current transgenders serving in the military, and he told me, you know, that's what we're working with White House to address exactly. That's what we're looking into. It's drawn a lot of controversy, not just here in the building, but also on Capitol Hill. Senator John McCain was basically saying, President Trump, not so fast. The department has already allowed troops to serve openly as transgender beginning last year, and this deadline was delayed until January. It was supposed to be this month where we found out what the policy was going to be under Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis, but Jim Mattis deferred and said, we need more time. We need to complete our investigation into how this is going to affect the department. So I think that this building as a whole feels like this is a little premature.
Is it known how many transgender personnel there are in the U.S. military?
It's interesting that you ask that because I was trying to get that number from the Pentagon today, and I was told while they can tell you the number of males and females, they cannot tell you the number of transgender because it is a medical issue. The RAND Corporation, that's a think tank here in Washington, has estimated that there are about 2,500 transgender active duty personnel in the U.S. military and another 1,500 in the reserves that are transgender. But we're not exactly sure. That's just an estimate.
President Trump tweeted one of the reasons he gave for this policy change. He talked about, that it was the burden of tremendous medical costs and disruption that transgender in the military would entail. You know, are there any, is it known, I mean, how much as far as, you know, the costs run for people who are transgender who serve in the military?
Well, that is part of the investigation that was supposed to be ongoing at this time, and it is currently underway, which is why, once again, a lot of people in this building are kind of feeling that this tweet was a little premature. But there are people that on Capitol Hill and in this building that say that there is no reason to force a service member who is able to fight, train, deploy, to leave the military, regardless of their gender identity. So I think that these differences are going to need to be resolved quickly, a lot quicker than we were anticipating. We weren't anticipating any final decision to come until January of next year, but this tweet has definitely accelerated that timeline. There are some people lashing out on Twitter, just as the president used Twitter to make the announcement. One of the country's most prominent transgender activists, Chelsea Manning, formerly Bradley Manning, he said, so not only do you want to ban transgender people, now you want to throw us in prison. Sounds familiar. And he was referring to the fact that he, now she, was in prison for leaking classified military documents to the anti-secrecy group WikiLeaks.
VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what kind of reaction has this been getting on social media?
There's a lot of confusion about this. As Carla was talking about, the fact that this went out over Twitter caught a lot of people off guard. They did not expect this kind of policy announcement to come through a series of tweets rather than coming from an announcement from the president or even an announcement from the Secretary of Defense. And as Carlos spoke about as well, there are a number of transgendered individuals serving in the U.S. Armed Forces, thousands perhaps. And so a lot of people wondering how this policy exactly is going to work, how they're going to implement this. But as far as the LGBT rights activists on social media, many of them saying that this is a step backwards, that this is an attack on the rights of transgendered individuals. And a lot of people pointing to President Trump's own words back during the campaign in 2016. He said he would be a friend to the LGBT community, that he wanted to open up the Republican Party and his administration to all different kinds of people, including gay, lesbian, transgendered Americans. So a lot of people taking issue with his words and using those against him on social media. And just as Carla talked about Chelsea Manning, one of the transgender activists, most well-known transgender activists in the U.S., there's also a lot of talk about Caitlyn Jenner, who was, of course, previously known as Bruce Jenner, the famed U.S. Olympian.
And who is a Republican.
Who is a Republican. And Bruce Jenner came out as transgender and is now Caitlyn Jenner, and has been a big and vocal Trump supporter. And has said that Republicans are better on LGBT issues than Democrats and was a big surrogate for President Trump during the campaign. Well, Caitlyn Jenner now tweeting out saying there are 15,000 patriotic transgendered Americans in the U.S. military fighting for all of us. What happened to your promise to fight for them? So taking aim directly at President Trump with her words, a lot of people praising her for doing that, but saying, well, you should have known when you supported him that he was going to be doing this. So a lot of talk about that. There are people who are supporting this decision as well. They're saying that it's leading to an overexpansion of who should be allowed in the military and that this decision from President Trump is going to better help U.S. forces fight and unit cohesion. But there is a lot of unhappiness on social media with this decision and how it was carried out.
Okay.
There's also a lot of talk about the health vote, a lot of action going on Capitol Hill late last night with first the vote to consider the repeal and replace measure and then that measure getting voted down. The Senate set today to hear skinny repeal, as they call it, kind of repeal now, replace later. Some people joking, it sounds kind of like a skinny latte or something. It's skinny repeal.
Skinny Frappuccino.
Skinny Frappuccino, something like that. But a lot of people talking, too, about John McCain, of course, his return to the Senate, getting a standing ovation. And then going on this speech where he talked about the discourse in Washington and how that needs to improve. Some people saying it was a great moment from a great statesman. Other people saying that he needs to kind of put his money where his mouth is. He talked about the discourse and then goes on to vote to try to repeal this bill. But a lot of people still wishing him well, glad to see that he's back in the Senate and doing well and hoping that he'll continue to recover from that brain cancer. You could see in a lot of the pictures shared across social media, the stitches above his left eye where he had that blood clot removed. So pretty stark photos there, but people hoping that he'll be on the mend as he continues to fight that disease.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. The U.S. Senate is set to vote on repeal-only health care bill. A top Democrat IT aide is arrested while trying to leave the U.S. for Pakistan. The extension of Philippine martial law signals a long fight against Muslim rebels, and Venezuelans begin a nationwide strike. Expanded coverage of these stories are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
On August 21st, a total solar eclipse will be visible over the entire contiguous United States, the first time a solar eclipse has done so since 1918. A Southwest Research Institute-led team working with telescopes mounted aboard two NASA research aircraft plans to use the occasion to conduct valuable airborne research. The team says throughout the total eclipse, it will study the sun's corona, which is its outer atmosphere, along with the surface of Mercury, the planet closest to the sun. They'll also try to take the first ever thermal images that will show surface temperature differences on planet Mercury. Konstantin Tsang, one of the Institute's co-investigators, says flying above the weather should guarantee ideal observing conditions and allow the team to gather higher quality images than what could be taken at ground level. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, an AIDS conference in Paris looks at the status of the fight against the disease. The Prime Minister of the UN-backed Libyan Government of National Accord, GNA, Fayez al-Sarraj, and the commander of the Libyan National Army, Khalifa Haftar, have committed to a conditional ceasefire and pledged to allow presidential and parliamentary elections next year.
Aujourd'hui, le président Sarraj et le général Haftar peuvent devenir les
French
symboles
President
de l'unité
Emmanuel
nationale
Macron, who hosted the talks, said both men could become
paix
symbols of national unity and a commitment to reconciliation and peace. He called their courage, making the joint declaration possible, historic. He warned failure would have a profound impact not only on the Libyan people in North Africa, but on Europe and on the issues of terrorism and migration. Middle East Institute scholar Zubair Iqbal tells International Edition's Victor Beatty he is less optimistic than the French leader about the chances of success.
Mr. Sarraj doesn't have any military force to enforce the agreement or the contract. The allied forces, particularly the French, may have moral support behind them, but they do not have material support to be able to enforce it. So it really is in the hands of General Haftar. He already controls about two-thirds of the country's territory. He controls vast areas where oil is produced in the east. He controls Benghazi. So under these circumstances, even though on the face of it, this agreement implies that there is a confluence of political and military interests, in reality, it is the supremacy of the military power, which in the hands of Haftar, which tends to imply that, as I said, the might is right, and he'll probably be able to enforce his ideas on Mr. Sarraj and the UN-sponsored government.
Of course, we have a North African country that has been relatively in chaos for the last 6 years since the fall of Muammar Gaddafi.
Right.
Is there anything that can resolve the crisis there?
There is a very important element in that country which ought to unify it, and that is the oil revenue. Oil is the, quote-unquote, the glue that has held the disparate tribes and entities together in that country under Gaddafi. If we can restore that back, the possibility is that economic exigencies and political interests will tend to converge. That is not happening at this moment because nobody is really talking about how do you unify all oil earnings in one kitty. And then people become claimants on that kitty by cooperating with some sort of a centralized government, as was the case with Gaddafi. There is no possibility of having a representative government over there. It doesn't. It's not going to work. The institutions don't exist. People do not have that attitude. Under those circumstances, how do you package the country together and have a political mechanism whereby it remains together is oil, and that doesn't exist anymore.
Zubair Iqbal of the Middle East Institute. He said he doesn't see anything else that can bring the disparate political interests of Libya together. He thinks the fighting will only end either through exhaustion or if oil prices continue to fall, depriving warring tribes of money to fund their activities. Science seems to be finally starting to win the war against the human immunodeficiency virus, HIV, that causes AIDS. But experts gathered at the Paris conference on the deadly disease say proposed cuts in global funding may delay the final blow. VOA's George Pudich reports.
It took 3 decades from the appearance of the first drug for slowing the onset of AIDS to today's drug cocktails that save many of the infected patients from what was inevitable death. The conference on AIDS, held this week in Paris, reflected optimism about new treatments and concern about proposed cuts in funding, especially by the U.S. government. Paris Mayor Anne Hidalgo, highlighted the lack of funds.
I want to remind you that $7 billion per year is still missing in the fight against AIDS in the world. This is the money we need to find. And thanks to our mobilization, we could assign it to the fight against AIDS.
In spite of the latest advances, the virus that causes AIDS remains a formidable enemy due to its unprecedented ability to develop resistance to drugs. New medicines keep it under control, but they are neither available nor affordable for many. Experts, such as the president of the International AIDS Society, Linda Gale Becker, also suspect a large number of unreported cases.
We know we're treating 19.5 million people, but there's another 17-odd million who need treatment today. And we haven't found those people. Many of them are in regions of the world such as West Africa, Central Africa, Eastern Europe, Central Asia, that we haven't got to. So that's very concerning.
However, UNAIDS Executive Director Michelle Sibide sounded an optimistic note.
We are reaching the people in need. We are saving lives because it's not only about proving that we can put people under treatment, but also that we needed to completely change the screening.
Among the highlights is the recent news about a 10-year-old South African child born with HIV. After only a year of treatment, the child has been virus-free for more than 8 years. Citing other similar cases, as well as the promising vaccines being developed, experts say the scales may finally be tipped against the disease that so far has killed about 35 million people. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
U.S. Congressman Steve Scalise was released from a Washington hospital Wednesday, almost 6 weeks after he was critically wounded in an ambush shooting on a baseball field in nearby Virginia. Scalise, the third highest-ranking Republican in the House, was shot in the hip when a gunman attacked a group of Republican members of Congress who were participating in a baseball practice on June 14th. MedStar Washington Hospital Center said in a statement Scalise is beginning intensive inpatient rehabilitation and added he's in good spirits and is looking forward to his return to work once he completes rehabilitation. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Singer Demi Lovato is releasing a new single, and VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me to tell us about the singer's often turbulent history.
Demi Lovato, who took the same path as many others through the Disney Channel, began on Barney and Friends, which wasn't a Disney show, but when she was 6 or 7, she was on alongside of her good friend Selena Gomez. Both of them came up through Barney and Friends, this mythical dinosaur figure for kids. And then eventually she landed a role on a Disney TV series called Sunny with a Chance. And then she went on to star in a film called Camp Rock. And she dated one of her co-stars, Joe Jonas, and it was a much publicized relationship. She's released a number of albums. In fact, she's had 9 multi-platinum singles and songs, and according to the latest statistics, she has achieved over $1 billion in streams with all of her music. And so she's back now with a brand new song from her next album. We don't know the title. We don't know the release date. This is the first song from the upcoming album. So let's check out Demi Lovato, and this is called Sorry, Not Sorry. Not payback,
bad chick, and baby, I'm the baddest. Stop playing with a savage. Can't have this, can't have this.
When you think of that term, sorry, I keep thinking of Justin Bieber.
He made that word quite famous, as a matter of fact. But he doesn't have exclusive rights to it.
Okay.
And so Demi's got a new album coming out, and the first song she's chosen is kind of a nice poppy, up-tempo song. She's known for that kind of music. It's called Sorry Not Sorry. We don't know the title of the album or its release date. Her last album in 2015 was an album called Confident, which kind of truly reflected a change for Demi. Demi has been a outspoken person on behalf of girl power and image and things like that. She's also, you know, talking about equal rights for women and gay rights. And so she's kind of using her fame in a very, very positive way. She's gone through a lot of things herself. She was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. She attempted suicide at one point. She was on tour with the Jonas Brothers, had to leave the tour and go into rehab. She was cutting herself.
Oh.
She had weight issues throughout her life. Well, she's turned things around now. She's approaching her 25th birthday coming up in a few weeks. And she's been working out once or twice a day. She's been dating a mixed martial arts fighter, learning mixed martial arts. She's got herself in great shape, and she's showing off her new body. She's always posting photos on Instagram. She has 153 million followers on Instagram. So we're all excited about the new album. By the way, she's also got her own cosmetic line, which is called Devon, and that happens to be her middle name. Her name is Demetria Devon Lovato. And so she's got her own cosmetics, and she's working on some other things, planning a tour, new album. Everything's going well for her. She even got her first Grammy nomination earlier this year. So it's been a great year, a great start to 2017 for Demi Lovato.
A very busy lady.
Very busy, probably going to get even busier now that the first song's out in a bit, and the song's called Sorry Not Sorry.
All right. Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings. Baby, I'm sorry. The music of Demi Lovato brings an end to our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The Russian Supreme Court recently upheld a ban against the Jehovah's Witnesses after the Russian Justice Ministry labeled the Jehovah's Witnesses an extremist group in April. It is the latest in a disturbing trend of persecution of religious minorities in Russia that includes the Church of Scientology. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert urged Russian authorities to lift the ban on Jehovah's Witnesses activities in Russia, to reverse the closing of the Jehovah's Witnesses Administrative Center, and to release any members of religious minorities that continue to be unjustly detained for so-called extremist activities. We further urge Russia to respect the right of all to exercise the freedom of thought, conscience, religion, or belief, said Ms. Nauert. The Jehovah's Witnesses was organized in the 1880s in the United States. There are more than 8.3 million Jehovah's Witnesses worldwide, including about 175,000 in Russia. The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, a federal committee responsible for making policy recommendations on international religious freedom to the President and Congress, also denounced the ban. The Supreme Court's decision sadly reflects the government's continued equating of peaceful religious freedom practice to extremism. The witnesses are not an extremist group and should be able to practice their faith openly and freely and without government repression, said Daniel Mark, chairman of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. This commission has designated Russia as a country of particular concern for systematic, ongoing, and egregious violations of religious freedom. All religious minorities in Russia should be able to enjoy freedom of religion and assembly without interference, as guaranteed by the Russian Constitution.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.